also there's that rhythmic complexity in jazz. I mean, you know, whatever the pianist's left hand or the rhythm section's playing, the soloist can dance around that. I mean, Lester Young was the classic example, I guess, of that.
Well, yeah, you in the early days of jazz, when jazz first started, a band would be playing something, when the piano player took a solo, everybody stopped. The bassist stopped, the guitar or banjo stopped, and the drummer stopped, and the guy played, ding, ding, tam, ding, ding, tam. And then all of a sudden the piano players, modern piano players, said, second, I don't have to sit there and stride away. I can just kind of block chord in and let the bass and drums just kind of carry the rhythm and then solo. So they became more right hand players, more conscious of right hand, though there was some of the greatest players ever were really two handed guys. Art Tatum, Oscar Peterson.
Yeah.
And people, Bill Evans, everything was the chord structures were all based upon playing with both hands.
Yeah.
But it was a wonderful era, and I miss it immensely, because you could hear, it's not often that you hear music that you go and you just, the visual, you can close your eyes if you want, you don't care about that. You don't have to have somebody screaming next to you. Bobby Sox, though they had that in those days with the Frank Sinatras and what have you.
Do you get it? I mean, are you able to go see music now? I mean, is that possible for you to go to a club?
Yeah, I go. I go to clubs now and then whenever there's something going. There's a few clubs. There's a Kawumba in Santa Cruz that puts on some nice things. And then there's Yoshi's in Oakland. Yoshi's puts on a lot of nice things. And in Carmel, where we live, there's a couple clubs they have. I think one's called a Jazz and Blues Company, and they have small little things. But they're nice. You get some nice stuff. And you could hear Mose Allison or Diana Krall or somebody, sometimes some really nice people.
Well, this may seem like kind of a big jump, but it strikes me that what you might learn from listening to jazz has a lot to do with the way you might cut a film. I mean, it's all rhythm. I mean, obviously you're paying attention to the drama and to what the characters are doing, but there's a musical quality to rhythm. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a subliminal level where you bring the viewer in.
Yeah, I think you like to, sometimes you cut with the music already there, and then sometimes you put the music in later, and then sometimes you'll feature, I like to feature silence as well, and sometimes the silence can speak as loud as anything else.
Yeah.
And then when you come in with music, it means something. It has a transition or it has some sort of a deal. I hate to, I'm not of the school that likes to wall-to-wall music. They used to do that in the old days, and we grew up, in my generation, we grew up with a lot of that, but nowadays I don't think you need to do that. I think if you have really good performing and really good material, you got to weave it back and forth so that you...
Well, the music in Mystic River is very discreet. I mean, it's not there, and then it's there, and then it has this just underneath what's going on.
Well, there's moments where in another era they might have put it in, where Sean and Tim Robbins are talking, and Sean's confessing that he's having trouble grieving for his daughter, and he kind of has a breakdown. You could have stuck violins into that, and it would have been awful, in my opinion. But I mean, it could have been done.
Yeah.
There's no saying it couldn't have been done. Or you could go. There's a lot of places you can do it. What I try to do is put in music as a pad, and then once in a while feature it a little bit. Feature it in some transition to kind of give people a breathing room, and then go back in as a pad. Or you're trying to grind their nerves with it.